Hey, we're on the air. Hey, folks, thanks for tuning into the Banff Podcast. I am your host, Mike Lafferty. We're here today to talk about pop culture and gaming, which we usually do. Our guest today is Christopher Dean from the UK. How you doing, Christopher?
I'm good, thank you. How are you?
Appreciate you joining us. Christopher had a successful Kickstarter, I want to say last year, with a game called I Love the Core, which looks like a lot of fun. And he's running one right now, which is a cool Supers RPG with a drawing mechanic. They're placing, instead of rolling dice, you draw. And it's called Is It a Plane? It's on Kickstarter right now. So thanks for joining us, Christopher.
No problem. Thank you for having me.
And my usual co-host, Adrian Smith. How you doing, Ade?
Yeah, not too bad. Thank you.
And Walt Rebilliard. How you doing, Walt?
Walt, not bad. Okay. No, I'm sorry. Yeah, I was going to say my British accent is slightly bad, but it's terrible on mute.
You guys have any tips for Americans who want to fake British accents? Is there any obvious catches we should avoid?
Yeah, don't do it like Dick Van Dyke.
Also, we don't all speak like this either. Yeah. Don't try and be cockney. Don't try and be posh. That's probably the main advice we can give, because most of us don't sound like either of that. But
do you guys have any opinion whatsoever on the royal wedding?
Or do we yes. Yeah. What you said. Yeah. Don't give it.
It's on tomorrow. That's it. That's my opinion of it.
I'm playing games all tomorrow. That's going to be my concern. I don't give a damn about the royal wedding.
Yeah, that's been pretty consistent from all the British people I know. They're kind of like, oh, yeah, we still have a monarchy. What the hell? So
yeah, they take a lot of our tax money to pay for that as well. It's like it's two people getting married. That's my opinion.
That's the taxes paying for that?
Yep.
Well, technically speaking, we're paying security for it.
Yeah.
They're paying for their own wedding as such, but the amount of security comes in, and I think the amount of security comes in at something like so many million, 36 million or something ridiculous. It's like four times the cost of the wedding or something. So,
dear Lord.
But again, that's the problem. If you're going to do it in London with a gazillion people going to turn up going, oh my God, waving flags, you have to security. You can't just let them go, oh, well, let them go on with it. It'll be fine. So, hey ho.
Yeah. So you can sense our joy about this occasion.
So speaking of important British news, do you guys have any opinion on the Mary Poppins sequel?
Yeah.
they have recast the Dick Van Dyke role with the guy from Hamilton. So, you know.
I still don't know who that is. So.
What, the main guy from Hamilton?
Yeah, Lynn.
Yeah.
You know his name, Lin-Manuel Miranda?
Yeah, that's it. Okay, interesting, because the guy can sing. I mean, so if there's going to be a musical, that makes it perfectly good idea.
Yeah, sorry, Lin-Manuel Miranda, I had it wrong.
But I'm surprised they're even doing a sequel at all.
Yeah, I have about as many opinions on that as I do the royal wedding.
And again, we are talking Disney and we are talking linked to Marvel. So any idea to rehash an idea somewhere eight to ten years down the line, then it's old rope in it, so they can get into it again. So
yeah, we already have a Mary Poppins sequel, and it's Guardians 2, obviously.
And I rather like that one. So
indeed, yeah, that's the best Mary Poppins they'll ever be. They can't remake it after that. What are they doing?
All right. Well, hey, let's segue awkwardly into talking about pop culture and stuff. Ade, what are you into this week?
Okay, so as I mentioned off before the podcast, there's not a lot happening as far as I'm aware. So I will say that interesting developments in my little corner of the DC universe was the Young Animal books, where last week or week before we had the severely delayed Doom Patrol issue 11. Which I believe was supposed to actually be a 12-issue miniseries before Milk Wars, but this is actually issue 11 that actually came out a month or two after Milk Wars, the crossover with the Justice League and the like. And the announcement as of last week that they are effectively truncating the entire Young Animal series to, I believe, 6-issue miniseries, and then possibly doing a restart after that. But Doom Patrol is the one book that apparently is not going to get a 6-issue miniseries. We already started on Shade and Cave Carson and Mother Panic, which have all had their kind of like genre shifts slightly. Cave Carson is now in space rather than being underground and that kind of thing. But Doom Patrol has is not coming back as at the moment. I think it's possibly because Gerard Way, I think, is actually directly writing that book, so that might be a reason for it. But yeah, so strange. Don't know what's going on there. But what some people have noticed as well is that the end of those miniseries does leave a pretty good open gate for the new Sandman universe imprint that's coming from Gaiman and a few other people. So I suppose it's one way to at least kind of like not give people imprintitis, as it was, and have 1,000 different things going on. So that's quite cool. But yeah.
I'm surprised it took them this long to do, you know, another imprint dealing with the Dreaming and Sandman, because that was ridiculously popular back in the day.
Yeah, interesting as well is that it's not technically, I don't think they're even Vertigo branded. I think they are now just kind of like Sandman universe, because I assume it's something to do with what they, when they did this last Sandman mini, that it was I can't remember that if that was Vertigo imprint or not. I think that was just DC universe. So we may, whether or not that means we'll see like the old Sandman books where we actually had links to the proper DC universe, because obviously the Young Animal managed to kind of do their thing and kind of have these little mini books that didn't really touch upon the regular stuff, and then they did when they did the crossovers. So whether or not, you know, I like to see my DC Universe stuff, I like to see it that I know where it kind of fits in, and you know, it'd be nice to see the Justice, and obviously the Justice League are getting a rebrand, and just after the No Justice miniseries, and we've got another Justice League Dark book coming out of that, which I think is going to have Swamp Thing and some other people in it. I can't remember who's in that. So again, we're kind of getting more Vertigo characters showing up in, or ex-Vertigo characters showing up in the DC Universe as regulars. So hopefully Sandman will be somewhere kind of at least on the edges of the DC Universe, not necessarily completely far removed from it. So,
well, if I'm not mistaken, I mean, Vertigo is no more, right?
No, Vertigo's still going, far as I know. Okay. Yeah, that's the thing. That's the crazy thing. It got to be, say, back in the old days, when I used to buy the Vertigo books, it used to be like the horror DC Universe books. So it'd be Doom Patrol, Shade, and Animal Man. I bought everything, and then all of a sudden it started becoming more of an imprint for like, hey, we're kind of like, we're doing like Image style books, but we're doing them with DC, so we'll call it something different. And now I think Vertigo literally became that. It's now just random stuff that doesn't quite fit with the DC universe, so they put it under Vertigo. But I'm not too sure. Yeah, it's very strange.
Okay, all right. So there's going to be a Doom Patrol live action. How is that even possible?
Apparently so. They announced, I know last time we spoke in the podcast, we spoke about the Titans live action movie, live action TV series, which is going to be on the DC Universe streaming service. They've now apparently announced also a Swamp Thing series and a Harley Quinn animated series, I believe. A Swamp Thing series, which I don't know if they've actually decided yet if it's animated or it's going to be live action. And then a Doom Patrol series, because apparently Doom Patrol shows up in the Titan series at some point. Well, I think it's like possibly where Beast Boy transitioning from one team to the other. And they're saying that Cyborg is bringing together the Doom Patrol to do something, and that we'll have a full Doom Patrol, which is going to be, you know, the classic, the Chief, Robot Man, Negative Man, and Elastigirl. So, yeah, interesting. Not convinced, because again, the only problem is it could be good. I mean, like I said before last week, when I said about the Titans thing, that the costumes they showed look really good. The Robin costume they showed, the Hulk and Dove costumes look like Hulk and Dove and Robin. But the worst thing about the write-up for the Doom Patrol is that they used the word reimagining in the write-up, which is never a good sign. When they just rather than just say, oh yeah, we're doing a translate. No, when they're doing a reimagining, it's like, oh yeah, remember when Doom Patrol was this five guys? Now it's, you know, it's 5 15-year-olds, and they drive around in cars and do stuff, and they're called the Doom Patrol. Because it's like, where did that come from? You're just using the name. So I don't know what's going to go on with that. But if they show up in Titans, I'm sure it's got to at least be somewhere along the lines of the superhero books.
Well, we'll see. I remember I had a similar response when I heard they were putting Squirrel Girl into the live action New Warriors, and I was like, I don't know if her brand of comic weirdness would translate to TV at all.
No, because like, said again, I can, because like, I don't know where Cyborg's going to be. See, the thing is that originally I don't believe even Cyborg was even mentioned as being as part of the Titans TV series, because obviously Cyborg's in the Justice League movie.
Yeah.
So I think he was one of the characters that got left out, because now they've mentioned that he's going to be the guy bringing the Doom Patrol together. It's like, okay, so we're going to have someone with that amount of makeup and SFX that we see in Justice League running around in the TV series. With Deathlock in, like, Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D., it's like, oh, yeah, I'm Deathlock. In the comics, I'm a half cyborg, but in here, I just look like a normal guy, except for when I get slightly angry, then I look a bit different.
Yeah, when it sweeps week and they got a little extra budget, then I get
So what's Robot Man gonna look like? I mean, he's a robot. So are we gonna see something along the lines of like the Vision in the Marvel Universe movies, where it's just like a guy effectively in makeup, or are we just gonna say, oh yeah, he's really a cyborg and he's really a robot, but he looks just like you and me? I don't know.
So interesting to see, and I'm looking forward to see what they want for their streaming service. But
that's the interesting thing, because obviously this is effectively a streaming service that is totally dedicated to DC fans. This is not like, hey, we're doing it on Netflix. Hey, so you're not going to get other genre shows in it. You're going to purely buy the DC Universe net service purely for if you're a comics fan. So whether or not they're going to chuck in subscription services for digital comics in there as well, or something else to kind of like, you know, sweeten the pot a little bit, I don't know. Because the idea you've got like four shows and that's literally it. They can't charge... You can't possibly charge that much to it. Like when Star Trek Discovery came out, you could kind of understand, because at least CBS has the back catalogue of shows, and if you have access to those and they're going to show those, so, oh, I can watch it reruns of this, that, and the other. That makes sense. But the idea you're literally hanging the entire DC Universe service on four or five completely never seen before shows, that's just...
Well, I think they have all the 66 you want to watch, and all the Lois and Clark you want to watch, and maybe all the old Superman.
All the Lois and Clark you want to watch? Crikey, that's not a lot, is it, really? Yeah, it's like literally one episode maybe, or two, if you're lucky.
Are you besmirching the finest work of Mr. Dean Cain? Because it sounds like you are.
Yeah, yes, I am. Yeah. Dean Cain, the thing is about the Legacy of Clark was, Dean Cain was actually a pretty decent Superman. And yeah. Lois and Clark would have been really good if they actually put Superman in it. I mean, it's a crazy idea, but rather than having Dean Cain run around as Clark Kent and Lois for like, you know, 40 minutes out of the 45-minute episode, you know, it's like, put Superman in it, for Christ's sakes. But again, we're going back to the classic TV tropes of, hey, let's do a TV series with superheroes in it. Oh, yeah, but we're not going to have any costumes. Oh, no, no. We're not going to have any bad guys. No, not going to have any bad guys in it. No, I just do random stuff that happens. So.
Oh, that reminds me, they'll probably have Smallville, too. So, you know.
Smallville. Yeah, see another. Yeah.
moving along, Christopher, you're reading a novel series right now. What are you into?
I am. So I'm currently reading a series called the Powder Mage series by Brian McKellen, which doesn't sound that it's like very comic book podcast appropriate, but I was thinking about it going, actually, this works pretty well. I mean, one, this is one of those books that you read, and this sounds like a role-playing game universe, but it also is a bit superhero-y. Like, you've basically got all these different kinds of people that live in this world. It's like a Napoleonic fantasy. Like, everybody's human, but you get, like, alternatives of human, which is where it starts to actually get a little bit, like, more superhero than it does fantasy. And you've got Powder Mages, who, like, the main characters, obviously, it's Powder Mage series, who have this weird power, magical power centered around gunpowder, so they can detect gunpowder, they can explode gunpowder with their minds, they can control bullets and like bend them around corners and shoot them much further than any musket can ever propel them, a bullet or musket ball. And they can also take gunpowder, or black powder it's called in this, like drugs, and make themselves superhumanly strong and fast and tough, which, as somebody who utterly adores both fantasy, military stuff, having made a military role-playing game, and comic books, this is kind of like a wonderful like combination of those things. It's ridiculous. So I totally adore it. So that's what I'm reading at the moment.
Out of curiosity, have you read Jonathan Strange and Mr. Norrell?
I have not read it. I've seen a bit there because they did a TV series of it over here, which I did see some of. But not all of, which I quite enjoyed. But I haven't read the book. But yeah, I've seen like there was a series. I don't know if that was shown in the US. Probably not. You can never tell.
I watched it on iTunes. It was I gotta tell you, the book was really something. Neil Gaiman called it the best English novel of the fantastic in 100 years.
Wow.
And I don't think he was exaggerating. But
it has Neil Gaiman's approval. I definitely have to read it in that case, because I really love Neil Gaiman. It's one of my favorite writers.
Yeah, I mean, the BBC series was good, but you kind of had some of those early Doctor Who effects there at the end where...
Oh, yeah, yeah. It's true. It was a little bit, classic, low-budget British sci-fi, you know? Like,
All right, well, cool. Hey, well, hey, Walt, you've been quiet so far. What are you into right now?
Oh, so much, so good. The thing that kind of stoked everything for me this week, I've been working like a
rented mule.
Yeah, thank you for that, because you know I'm working so hard I can't even come up with a good analogy. So earlier in the week, they just released the series poster for the new Young Justice. Mm-hmm. Young Justice and the Outsiders. Looks like they got a brand new team with a couple of returning favorites. So I was pretty stoked about that. But the thing that really got me fired up was that I heard that Sci-Fi had picked up and then released a trailer for Deadly Class, Rick Remender's book.
Tell me about it, because I haven't heard about this one.
All right, Deadly Class is one of the coolest comic books out there right now. They're on a regular release schedule, which is really, really good, because it's you can pick it up and trade. It's just so much fun. It's about this kid who's pretty much homeless, and he gets into some trouble. And long story short, he is invited to take part in a boarding school, and that boarding school happens to train the world's deadliest assassins for the biggest mob families on the planet.
Oh, okay.
So it's kind of like Harry Potter met the Bourne Ultimatum. It's all the pressures and all of the situational drama of being in high school, except Marcus, who's one of the main characters, is really having a hard time. Instead of passing chemistry, which he's good at, Death and Dismemberment 101, he's having a hard time with. So, I mean, it's really a lot of fun. Sci-Fi picked it up. They've already released the first trailer. It looks pretty good and looks pretty close to the original. The original was set in 1987, and it looks like they're keeping that same kind of feel. They're not updating it, so that you're not going to have, you know, people running around with cell phones, although – there is the occasional bag phone for those of us old enough to remember those things. But it's a really interesting series. It's been going on for some time now. And if you're into indie comics and into slightly twisting the genre to see what you can make of it, I highly recommend Remender's Deadly Class, especially if you like a bit of snark and commentary that, as Chris McLaughlin constantly says, doesn't sit on your chest. So it's a fun read. So I'm looking forward to the series coming out.
Oh, cool. All right.
I take it you also seen, as you mentioned Sci-Fi, and I believe you're a fan, they've cancelled The Expanse.
I know. It's like...
and are they... because you've read the novels, correct?
I have, yeah.
How far are they through the novel series?
First two seasons is the first book.
Out of how many books?
Five.
Crazy, wow. Isn't it? I mean, that's weird, isn't it? Don't make any sense to me. It's not being funny. Sci-Fi Channel, I'd say that pretty much sums up science fiction. You know, it's like, hey, science fiction.
Yeah, I mean, and not only is it a good show, but it's also speculative science fiction. So if you're kind of tired of Star Wars, Star Trek, you know, those kind of deals, it's more along the lines of, this is where we could be in 100 years.
Yeah, it's more grounded in reality and, yeah, kind of like almost hard sci-fi kind of stuff.
Yeah, I mean, when you have to worry about plugging into a chair and getting an injection to keep your arteries from liquefying from the G-forces of doing a hard burn, I mean, it's kind of stuff that NASA and some of the other space agencies are looking at right now, like liquid oxygen systems for suits so that we have more density in our bodies as we're exposed to pressure. You know, I mean, like all this crazy, crazy tech they're exploring in the books, they're exploring in the TV show, and the fact that they're going to cancel it is just insane. But what I find really interesting is you got all of these fans petitioning places like Hulu, Amazon, Netflix. You gotta save it, blah blah blah. I mean, the same thing for they just canceled Lucifer after the fourth season, saying that you know, they're shopping that around. iZombie, which is actually pretty popular.
Yeah, that dropped as well, didn't it?
Yeah, they're gonna do one more season and then they're gonna kill it.
Well, I mean, it's going to have five seasons, so it's in the place where you can start shopping around to streaming services and you can start doing syndication. But I got to tell you, I've been watching iZombie since season one, and while I still enjoy it, it's kind of gotten that directionless feeling like you got in the last season or two of Battlestar Galactica, where you're watching episodes and you can almost feel the writer's room somewhere where they're just going, what the fuck do we do now?
The one that killed me that sci-fi just acts and I don't understand it was Dark Matter. It's one of those shows where if you like Star Wars and you like Star Trek and you like kind of that that pirates in space kind of feel, it really filled that niche. But it wasn't like, all right, let's you know, blasters and laser swords every episode. It was more character focused. Mm. So and it was a really good take on you know, space opera style sci-fi, and they left it on a cliffhanger and they said, nope, we're good. And it's just like the fans ever since have been like, what the frig are you doing? I mean, come on. So
yeah, I don't know. I don't know what the ratings were for any of these shows, but I can't believe that there is not some kind of crossover with, you know, Walking Dead fans or, you know, yeah, whatever going on, that at least somewhere along the line they must have a decent amount of fat.
Well, they just kind of sci-fi views. Just picked up the new George R.R. Martin series, the horror series set in space.
Nightflyers or whatever.
Yeah.
Nightflyers, that's the one, yeah.
Oh, I read a short story of that. That's great. I like that.
Wasn't there talk of them doing Wild Cards as well at one point?
I don't know if sci-fi was going to do that.
No, just remember yeah, it's weird to say that some shows you think literally would at least be allowed to run their course and like, okay, that's a story. And then you think, some shows really should be allowed to continue any further than they've got, and they still manage to go for 10, 12, 15 series.
Well, I mean, look at Supernatural. You know? They're on season 15. It was only supposed to go to season 5.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, I mean, the original showrunner, you know, God bless him, you know, basically came out and said, yeah, season 5 and I'm done, guys. This is the story I wanted to tell. And, I mean, I watched an awful lot of Supernatural, and I enjoy most of it, but, you know, you get to the point you're doing musical episodes. You're literally doing crossovers with Scooby-Doo. I mean, they're kind of just running out the clock at this point.
I mentioned it many times here before, and I've said to everyone I know, I would rather have a TV series that is four or five really decent series than go, oh, it's on series 12 now. Yeah, kind of lost its way at series 6, and then never got any better. Because it's just like, you know, why not have like that perfect 5-series run where it's like a classic of television rather than, oh, it was good, and then it went really, really bad. It's just... It seems really strange. People just, instead of like moving on to a new property or whatever, they kind of run stuff into the ground after a while and just kind of like, yeah, that's all right. Just keep it going. We'll just make some money out of it, because people stick with it and, you know, continue to watch even though it's, yeah, we're not doing our best work, but it's okay. It's like Walking Dead. I mean, I've not now watched Walking Dead for 3 series because it's just like, well, whatever. And I don't miss it. I don't really give a monkey's what's happened. So it's just like, that's fine. It's just, it's crazy.
Yeah, I had to give up on that one. I mean, I saw where the book was going, where they kill Glenn, and I was like, the issue where they kill Glenn was pretty much a snuff film.
Yeah.
Like, this is almost nihilistic. It's just Kirkman fucking with people.
There's not
a story he wants to tell.
I can't remember what season, I think they'll say, I know the season, the episode I finished was, it was the, where they've just gone to the town, and they spent, a lot of time getting Rick kind of like a new relationship with this lass who had 2 sons. I think one of the sons tried to kill him, and they escaped like at the end of that season. They kind of like, the zombies are coming in, they escaped, and then within the first 10 minutes of the first of that next episode, they killed the son, they killed her, they killed the other son. And it's like, right, I just switched off, that was it. 10 minutes into it, I thought, no, because what is the point? This is the Walking Dead seems to have this thing where they go, right, this is the really important thing. We have to focus on this for 15 episodes. This is really important. They get to the last episode, and then that's done over with, and by the next season, it's like, oh, we'll forget about that. We're now on to the new thing we care about, and everything else is discarded. So it's like, everything's focusing on Rick and this new relationship, and then within 10 minutes of the next episode, that was all wiped out completely because they were killed. So it's like... I don't remember the book being like that. That's what's so crazy. The book seemed to have a lot more kind of natural flow to it. You couldn't really say, even the stuff that was like, okay, this is the prison stuff, and then this is the stuff afterwards. It didn't. There was still continuity, and people would kind of like drop in and out, and stories would kind of continue through it. But the TV series literally just has that rigid nothing goes past these 13 episodes, because people will forget after a little while, so we won't worry about that. We'll just kind of wipe the slate clean on episode one of the next series and do like another 13 episode storyline.
Well, thank God we have Into the Badlands to fill those holes in our soul, because everybody needs superhuman kung fu action.
I need to catch up on season 3. That's out now, isn't it?
Oh my God, it's so much fun.
See, I never even heard of that. What's that? I didn't even know.
Really? What? Oh my God.
I'm with you, my fellow Brit. I also don't.
Yeah, don't forget, we're in the UK, so we get everything about 6 months behind everybody else.
Yeah.
Or we get a situation where it's like, terrible. Hey, this is a really, really important TV series. You get advertising all over the TV series, and then you go on Google or IMDb, and you find out it was cancelled after 13 episodes in the US about 4 months ago. And you think, okay.
Our Netflix is just terrible. It doesn't have like anything decent. You have stuff way before us.
Yeah. Well, search Into the Badlands on Netflix, because I know they have it here in the United States. They have the first two seasons on. It's about it's a post-apocalyptic romp through the American wasteland after a type of EMP goes off. There's massive death on a ridiculous scale. So a couple of military powers get together and they establish a series of baronies, and they decide to outlaw all firearms because it's just too dangerous to have them around, especially with the lack of like medical care. There's no way to handle like massive gunshots from like military style weapons.
Kind of like an American Mad Max with a whole lot of kung fu.
Yeah, and then you mix in about halfway through the first season, you find out that there's a potential lost civilization that might have access to modern technology, and mixed in with that is there are these people with like superhuman kung fu abilities that are sprinkled through the population, and this group is going around collecting them. It's just it sounds really, really like, you know, like bad Saturday morning kung fu sci-fi theater, but it's so much fun and the actors are good.
Nick Frost is in there.
Yeah, that's cool.
Yeah, he shows this kind of a chubby kung fu monk.
The fighting's fun. The fighting's fun. Like,
is the fighting up to the standard of Iron Fist? Is what I was going to say.
Oh God, no, please, no.
It's better than most action movies I watch. They do cool. Really good fight choreography.
So. Have you seen stuff like Crouching Tiger, Hidden Dragon, House of Flying Daggers, stuff like that? It's like that.
Okay, cool.
Yeah, so we should do a whole episode just talking about that, because that's a really amazing show.
Don't you threaten me with a good time.
Okay. Speaking of good times.
Blunt Force segue. Go!
Usually it doesn't take us this long to get around to talking to gaming, but here we are talking about gaming. And Mr. Christopher Dean has done two Kickstarters. He's got one right now called Is It a Plane, which is a superhero RPG. It looks like a hill of fun. You should check it out. Before we talk about that, I want to talk about I Love the Core, which was your first RPG Kickstarter, and it also looks like a ridiculous amount of fun. I think Walt would be into it because it looks like Walt's kind of fun. Could you tell us a little bit about I Love the Core?
Yeah, sure. So, yeah, with games, I basically make ridiculous over-the-top games. That's probably the one connective thing between these two games. I Love the Core was heavily inspired by Aliens, Starship Troopers, Pitch Black, Predator, Dog Soldiers. Basically, any movie that's about often bunches of soldiers stuck together against frightening horrors is pretty much a big inspiration for this game. You play members of the United Colonial Marine Corps. The idea is that most of humanity died out 250 years ago, and you are part of a totally not fascist right-wing, you know, setup of humans. And the whole thing about I Love the Core is obviously the name is a reference to Aliens, but also it's very much an important part of the game where players quickly learn that they do not love the Core at all, or they're psychotically crazy loyalists. It's basically a game about, yeah, going mad rapidly or slowly, possibly dying horribly, but you generally kick a lot more ass than you do in most horror games. High explosion gore fest if they want, or do a very, very slow, tense, you're all dead, go mad type stuff. It's a small niche, but at the same time, it's got a lot that you can do with it. That's the general gist of the game.
So it was on Kickstarter. If you want to buy it now, where could you find it?
So yeah, it's on Joyful RPG now for sale. There are books on there. If people get can contact with me as well, I'm quite happy to throw people discount codes as well. People show interest. Yeah, they only went on sale just at Christmas, basically. So I kickstarted it in 2016. And yeah, it just took me just over a year to make it. So almost hit my deadline. About 7 weeks late, which I'm told by most people isn't late by Kickstarter standards. No,
that's probably not really like Kickstarter standards. So, all right, well, that's cool. Yeah. Something to check out. And if they want to get in touch with you for that discount coupon, how would they do that?
Yeah, so people contact me on my email, contact@ilovethecore.com. If they go to my website, ilovethecore.com, my contact details are on there as well. So yeah, searching I Love the Core RPG will likely find it quite easily.
All right.
And yeah.
Cool. All right, now let's talk about the superhero RPG, because that's kind of our bailiwick here. Is it a plane? Now I'm going to describe what I think it is, and it'll be wrong, and then you can come in and eloquently correct me. You have replaced dice in this game, and in its place you have drawing, sort of like in Pictionary.
Yep. And
is that correct?
That is correct.
All right, so number one, people should go to Kickstarter right now, search for Is It a Plane? They'll find the game. You've got an amazing Silver Age kind of art image on there with some heroes fighting a giant robot. Just satisfy my curiosity, because I'm wondering how this deals in a combat. Let's say, you know, Aid and Walt and myself are playing, you know, Batman, Green Lantern, and Aquaman, and we're fighting Gorilla Grodd, except he's, you know, how would you do a combat scene with drawing as opposed to rolling dice?
Take me through that. Well, firstly, these heroes are up against Gorilla Grodd, so you need to decide as the editor, which is the game's master of the game, what the situations are in this scene. So it's Gorilla Grodd, so Gorilla Grodd will be a situation, as you have to defeat Gorilla Grodd. He's probably got ape minions, so then you would have ape minions as a situation. He has mind control powers, so he may have mind controlled the populace to attack the heroes. So the heroes have not only got to save the populace, but stop them attacking them and keep them safe. So you probably would have mind control as a separate situation to potentially deal with. Once the GM has got their situations, they state the power of the situation, which is between 1 and 9. So let's put Gorilla Grodd. He's quite a powerful hero. He's a powerful villain, should I say. He's got, you know, gorilla abilities plus psychic powers. He can slave anyone. So we'll say he's like a power of 8. Say the populace is being mind controlled by him. So that's a big, massive threat for the players to deal with. So say make that 8 as well. And then the gorilla minions, make them 5 because they're minions. Once the players have got situations to deal with, the GM will describe the scene, you know, who is attacking what, you know, what the scene looks like as the heroes get there. Does Grodd deliver a monologue of some kind? Of course he does, he's Gorilla Grodd. So in this case, the GM has done several minutes of monologuing, described a big massive battle scene. This is where the GM then gives the players the amount of time they have to draw to respond to what they want to do. Because a monologue would use, I would say, 3 minutes would be it. Your maximum drawing time is 3 minutes, minimum is 30 seconds, which no player of this game ever wants. So in that case, players have got situations, they know what they need to deal with. They have got 3 minutes to draw their responses. They cannot tell the GM what it is that they're drawing. They cannot tell each other what they're drawing. They can use dialogue beforehand. So, you know, if they've managed to sneak up on Gorilla Grodd and they've had several minutes of conversation, they've come up with a plan that will help them. However, if Gorilla Grodd comes in out of nowhere and just, you know, zaps a bunch of people and has them attacked the Justice League, then they have had little time to plan. In this case, they get about 10 seconds of in-character dialogue per minute of drawing. So they got about 30 seconds each as players. This is enough time for, say, Superman to go, all right, I'm taking on Grodd. Green Lantern to go, right, I'm going to try and keep the civilians apart with energy constructs. Enough time for, you know, Flash to say, right, I'm going to hit each of the gorillas. There you go. Everyone's got a plan. The editor knows roughly what people are going to do. The specifics are down to the drawing. So the players then have a frantic 3 minutes to draw whatever actions they want. They will have a bunch of panels. These will be actually from Joyful RPG's printed cards that you can draw on with dry erase pens of many colors. You draw what you want to do. Effectively, you can draw your character's effects on anything around you. So if the Flash wants to run and grab people and move them out the way, then you will draw several panels of doing that. If you want to punch the villain, that is fine. If you want to punch the villain into space, You need to draw panels that you think will be punching the villain into space. The clincher is, however, when the drawing is done, you haven't told the editor exactly what you're doing. You have to put the panels down on two actual A4 pages. And then the editor will read the panels like you're reading a comic book. And then that means they actually have to interpret what they think is happening in the drawings. So whereas you might finish, well, you may have decided you're punching the villain into space. If you didn't have enough time to draw Earth and like color in lots of black to indicate space, and you just drew the villain flying upwards, the editor will then probably describe that villain has gone orbital. They may come down, they may attack. As specific as you are may help you. However, if you're too specific, you might not have enough time to draw it. If you add in stuff that's totally out of context, you might confuse the GM. At this point, it's their job to go with what you've drawn and make it up. So the equivalent of like rolling a one here is, you know, just overstating your drawing abilities and making gibberish. but normally what happens is players kind of learn what they can draw very quickly, and there's no actual drawing skill involved. It's more of a game of like visual communication and interpretation. So, you know, if you want to punch a villain in a direction, an arrow will do just fine. You want to punch him through a building, draw a rectangle, draw a dotted line, and draw the villain on the other side, and maybe rub out some of the lines in the rectangle. Then you've got a villain being punched through a building. And that is the basic gist of how it works.
Okay. No, I hear what you're saying. How would you do the fight?
Okay. So what happens is the situations have power. Your panels have power as well. The bigger the panel you use, the more power it potentially has. So you've got basically three different sizes of panel, which have a power of 1 to 3 standard. However, the power of your panels can be used against you. So if you punch a villain with 3 power 1 panels, the first panel to punch them might do 1 damage to them. Them flying through the air, however, may not do anything as they're not hitting anything. Hitting the building, well, that 1 power panel may just create a collapsing building situation of just 1 because it's just starting to crumble. However, if you use 2 big power 3 panels to punch the villain through a building, and yet the GM has decided this is some kind of dark side level villain, your power 6 may only do 1 to the villain and then power 5 to the building. Alternatively, if you ignore a situation, it can then damage you. So if you're in the middle of a flaming building and you're using panels to rescue civilians and not deal with the fire and nobody else does, you might then get hurt by the fire. So what you do, the GM can then follow with several descriptive pages of the comic book. So if you engage a villain and deal them some damage, the villain may then, like, you know, shoot lasers from their eyes and attack you. You've then got to deal with the situations, but also descriptively whatever the GM has thrown at you. You can also take damage when you're attacking people. So if you've drawn the panels of you fighting a bunch of mooks and you're not like a massively trained martial artist, some of the power of those panels may deal harm to your character. So harm works exactly the same like situations. So if a situation rises to 10, so if players ignore them, or if they try and affect a situation and accidentally make it worse, because this is a comic book and that happens a lot, the situation rises to 10, the scene ends badly for the heroes. If the player takes harm, however, they are taken out of action. So this could mean that they're unconscious, dead, gibbering and mad. It depends what the situation is, effectively. So that is how players can get hurt. But it's less a game of combat, more a game of whilst you're fighting the villain, can you also rescue the people in that collapsing building? It's got much more of a wider frame of reference than a lot of comic book games have. And that's what I wanted to do, to kind of represent the frenetic nature of comic books and also the massive potential for collateral damage, which is where Silver Age inspiration in particular comes in. Because, you know, people picking up lampposts and smacking people through buildings all the time. So that's a big part of it. Like, if you do that, you will actually damage the environment around you, and then you'll have to deal with that. If, say, a building collapses, the scene ends with a situation rising to 10, then the next scene may be you dealing with a bunch of angry media and angry citizens. So depending whether you can resolve scenes or not makes a big difference for your characters moving through the story that you're playing in. Hope that makes sense.
say you got a bunch of people at the table, and you know, a couple of the guys, they can crank out a mean stick figure, but you got somebody like Aid, who is a professional artist.
Yeah.
You know, is he going to have an advantage over the guys who are just
actually it's out? The other way around. In my playtesting experience, artists struggle the most, because by the time they've finished drawing, they have just finished their stick figure, which is all fancily detailed and doing nothing. I have artists who get, they do eventually do it, but to start with, get more frustrated. People that cannot draw accept that, and they just do a stick figure, and their stick figure can do a lot of things because it's easy to draw a stick figure. Meanwhile, an artist is sitting there going, that doesn't look like a car. I literally had an artist shouting constantly going, these don't look like cars, Chris. I'm like, I know they're cars. Plus, you're technically cheating right now, but I can tell they're cars. Her boyfriend was drawing just fine. He can't draw at all, and yet he was giving people $100 bills to make them stop fighting crime. It was genius.
Yeah.
It was, the story was, it was Christmas, and there were basically a bunch of villains who were robbing places because they needed stuff for Christmas. So he decided, upon hearing their sub story, to draw a panel with just a rectangle, and then he wrote $1,000 on it. Because you are only allowed to write if it is onomatopoeia, so bang, pow, kaboom, if it is anything that is deemed a label in a comic book. So writing $1,000 was totally fine. And he used a high enough power panel to stop that villain by giving him money and telling him to lightly to leave the shop that he was raiding. And there you go. So that was somebody who couldn't draw but was quite creative. So really, it's creativity that you need in this game, not necessarily drawing skill.
Okay. Well, that is pretty cool. I was about to ask the same question Walt asked. So now I don't know what to say, but yeah.
Well, here's the thing. Like, can you cheat? Can you sit there and, like, say you have a digital tablet at the game table? Can you actually pull up a series of panels and say, I do this?
Well, there are actually like panels like with the game. I mean, you can make your own panels if you want. There's information in the book for people making their own panels and the sizes of the panels. That will be up to GMs. But I say, if one player is going to do that, then all the players would have to be able to do that, or it wouldn't be unfair. But yeah, the idea is the game comes with specific cards for you to draw on. But I'm sure there'll be lots of weird alternatives. I have had some people go, is there an electronic format for this? I'm like, at the moment, no, because I'm like one guy and this is my second game. But if the game does well enough, then, you know, there's lots of potential for that. But yeah, at the moment, it's just about using physical drawings to do stuff.
So I'm assuming also that, because you said that the size of the panel kind of dictates how much impact it has on the story.
Yeah.
If I was to use a size 3 panel with the Justice League fighting Darkseid, and then my size 3 panel is Darkseid gets scared by a mouse and has a heart attack and dies. Now, how do you interpret that as a GM?
Okay.
Stop the story from just stopping right there. How do you stop that?
There are many ways that you can deal with that. For a start, players are generally encouraged to use their shticks. So players do actually have stats in this. You've got 3 specialities, which are your strength, speed, and savvy. Each of these have got a score. The amount of the score that you have in it is how many shticks you have. So they all start at 1, and you have 5 points to put into them. You can put the same shtick into multiple specialities, and it will expand how it works. So, for example, you can put energy blast into strength, and therefore you can do big fireballs, or you could do big cones of energy, that kind of thing. You could put energy blast into speed, and you'll be able to shoot off loads of bolts of energy at multiple targets. You could put it into savvy, and then suddenly you can shoot out energy that blinds everybody. You kind of dictate how your abilities work thematically when you make the character. So, if a player was to try and use a mouse to scare Darkseid, this may work if they're, for example, playing Animal Man, because Animal Man could control animals. So if they go, I'm playing Animal Man, then this may be allowed. However, this panel does not apply to any of these characters' sticks. Therefore, the player can use the power of the panel against the players. So if they have drawn a panel of Darkseid running away from the mouse, that is not how the GM has to describe that. They can instead turn it into, you have ticked off Darkseid, and now he's charging at you. The other alternative is that editors have what are called scares. So though the editor does normally not draw, they have scares that they can employ up to 3 times in an issue. One of these scares is called, which allows you to take away panels. It is written in the rules that you're generally expected to use these on panels that you deem offensive to people's sensibilities or to the story. So yeah, if someone's trying to scare Darkseid with a mouse, you are perfectly allowed to just remove it. I have some players that do this kind of thing deliberately just to make me take the panels away and use a scare. But yeah, so yeah, there's stuff in place to do that. And generally people that play it, you know, respect the capabilities of the character. But yeah, people that tank the P can be dealt with quite easily. And yeah, the rules are adjusted for that. But yeah, solid question.
Good stuff.
It sounds like you've been playtesting quite a bit on the convention circuit, is that?
Yeah, quite a bit. I mean, to be fair, it's quite a recent thing. Like, I developed this during Isle of the Core. So, you know, I had that slump after getting funding where you have to wait for all the feedback from all the backers so you can write all the backer-specific stories that you've got from people and stuff. So while I was waiting on all that, I'm waiting on art and stuff. So while I was waiting, I made Is It Plain in a month. I ran it for a few months last year, but that was just with some friends and I hadn't touched it. Since January, I decided, right, I'm going to get this done. So the last 5 months have been dedicated to getting this ready for Kickstarter, at which point I've been to a whole bunch of different small conventions, games days, that kind of thing, run it for friends. I've probably run it with at least about 80 different people, I'd say, at this point, possibly more than that in just a few months. Because, yeah, I know a lot of people travel around. I'm in Birmingham, which is pretty central in the UK, so it's quite easy to get to places. And, yeah, just trying to test it with as many people as I can. And it's gone down quite well. It's just convincing people to play it in the first place can be a challenge. Once they give it a go, they suddenly realize it's different to what they thought. I think people see a very, very silly game when they imagine the drawing. But when you only have 30 seconds to stop yourself getting shot in the head because somebody's pressed a gun to your head and you don't have superhuman reflexes, nobody's paying attention to how stupid your drawings look. Absolutely nobody. I have run a game that was a noir World War II stealth adventure, and the game was serious the entire way through, despite terrible drawings all around.
You mentioned it before the podcast started, trying to convince people of another way of doing RPGs a problem. Now, I think this is a good idea. I think you've got something that's unique, and I think if you've seen Fiasco is not a traditional RPG.
Oh, I love Fiasco.
And Dread, where you use the Jenga blocks to get the resolution for the stuff in that. That's not traditional, but I saw them play on tabletop on YouTube, and they both look like really good ways of getting people outside of the normal RPG community into it, because hey, it's Jenga, but we tell the story as we play it. So this, I think, will work. This is Pictionary with stories. I think it's a really good selling point. I think it's a unique idea. Yeah, definitely cool.
Thank you very much. Yeah, I mean, for me, the importance is when I'm designing a game is to make sure I kind of want to pick a style and a medium and make sure the rules represent that medium. So if I Love the Core, I went for dice because I wanted tension building. And with I Love the Core, it's a very limited amount of dice. You've literally got 3 dice rolls in a scene and 3 passive total. So it means every choice you make in I Love the Core is really important. In this case, it was making comic books. So I thought, well, making it visual is the most obvious way to represent a comic book. And when you're done, if you have artistic players and you take photographs of the panels, you can show the game to other people, you can explain the game to other people, and if you know an awesome artist, they could turn that into something. And I think that's a special thing. Also, again, it's comic books, so it's just insane. Your actions can accidentally counteract other players because of where you put the panels on the page. Situations are constantly going up and down. You've got very little time to think about what you're doing, and it represents that kind of chaos in a good way that comic books, I feel, have when you can read, especially when it's, you know, several pages of battle, not much dialogue type stuff, and just energy beams flying everywhere. That's the kind of thing this is designed to represent.
You ever get anybody wanting to break the fourth wall in the comic book?
I had a player who wrote an advert. They just spent their entire turn while everyone else was taking actions to make a splash page. Just to make an advert, it was hilarious.
All right, that's pretty cool.
By any chance a snack cake ad?
It was. It was pretty much a snack advert. No, it was Easter eggs, because it was played at Easter. The player brought an Easter egg for everybody, and then he did an Easter egg advert. So,
I run a gaming company myself. I like to work in snack cake ads in the back, just because.
fair enough.
I'm done with that. Wait, I'm coming up on the hour mark. I need to get back to slaving for my soulless corporate paymasters. Do we have any closing thoughts before we wrap up?
We need to schedule Into the Badlands. And everybody should go out and back this Kickstarter immediately.
Yeah, this sounds like a lot of fun. I got one question for you, Chris. I'm not sure. Yes, if have you ever played this game online, and could that even work?
I have not played it online, and I think, yeah, you probably would need special software. I don't know that software exists, but I certainly do not have the resources to try it out. Again, that's one of those things where if this version of the game works, it's always possible that I could maybe get people with the expertise to do that. But yeah, I have not played it.
I obviously use Roll20 quite a lot. If you were to make the panels as JPEGs to put on Roll20 for the sizes, players can draw on the screen on Roll20. So I can't see why that would be a problem. You literally would have like the panels on the screen, and then the players would have the 30 seconds or whatever to draw on the screen using the actual little pens included in that. And then the GM could interpret actually off of the screen. I can't see it being a problem at all.
Awesome. Huh. That sounds good. I've only used Roll20 literally once, and I had a bit of a nightmare because it was for a Twitch streaming channel, but for Isle of the Core, and I'd never used it before, and I was like, I don't know how this works.
Yeah, I can definitely see that working. Yeah, that's okay. Definitely doable. Yeah, yeah.
I will add it to my to-do list of things to look at.
And like, say somebody wants to kind of get a look at what this looks like at the table. Have you filmed a session that people can go and look at?
I haven't filmed a full session yet, but what I do have on the Kickstarter, there are actual layout pages, so there are actual gameplay pages. I'm currently working on like an entire game that I've annotated, which is going to go up. But there are some pages on, I think, one of the updates, which was from somebody who decided to GM this. He'd only played it once at a con. He wanted to GM it, and he ran it with six people. And there is an entire game of the pages drawn out, so people can see what it looks like. I know I'm currently busy annotating one of those sets of pages to explain it even more. There are some samples on the Kickstarter at the moment, but they're like way too bright. Like, I made them really quick. But yeah, those will be better annotations will be up on there, like probably by next week as well. So, which I'm going to try and post around.
All right. So we're kind of in a table game, board game sort of space. I'm guessing every session has a certain number of pages to make a book.
Yeah.
How long does a typical session take? A couple hours?
So, an issue is 22 pages. Okay. 22 pages with about three players will take you about 2 hours. With about six players can take you anywhere between an hour and an hour and a half, because this game goes faster the more players you have. And yes, I mean that. Because the more players you have, the more situations are being dealt with more rapidly. So an issue goes faster because there's more panels going down and more pages. So yeah, and it pretty much sticks to those times pretty rigidly. I think the longest I ever went on was 2.5 hours. And I think that was just because it was descriptive heavy rather than drawing heavy. But the more the drawing you do, the faster it actually goes. Plus it's simultaneous. So if players are acting, they're all doing it at the same time, which, you know, reduces a lot of the typical role-playing game slowdown that you get. So you can get a very involved game in like just 2 hours, basically.
Because everyone can draw at the same time and you have to compete for the GM's attention.
Yeah, the GM just lists the situations and then everybody draws. So that is the equivalent of deciding what you want to do, telling the GM what you want to do, describing what you want to do, adding the numbers, working out a total, GM works out the total. That is the equivalent of that, effectively. Or at least half of that, and the other half is the GM reading the panels, which is just entertainment for everybody. So therefore it's very fast paced.
Okay, cool. Well, we should talk later, see if we can do one online sometime. I would love to.
That would be fantastic. Yeah, I'll have to look into the Roll20 options for that, I think.
We can make it work. All right, I do have to get back to work. Aid, Walt, Chris, thanks to everybody for coming out. Really appreciate it.
Thank you very much. Those were fantastic questions. I really enjoyed it.
Hey, thanks to our listeners. And if you like what you hear on the Banff podcast, check out, do a search for us on Patreon. You know, we're like a public radio, except cooler. So, check us out there. A few dollars away to defray the server costs. And we'll catch you next time on the Banff Podcasts.